Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
So, Tim Bertolotti, we enter our lightning round now. I'm going to ask you about a whole bunch of things. So, you know, if you would be so kind, and I mean no insult here, just keep it, you know, to a minute or so, you know, on each of these, all right?
Sure.
Oh, when you said sure that way, it meant you thought you had been insulted, right?
No. You're asking an academic who teaches 50 and 80-minute classes to speak in minute increments.
Okay, then. 2 minutes on each. Okay, here we go. Or as much as you want. Ed Markey wins an easy Senate term. Is there anything to talk about here?
Well, this is as we expected. He won by 24 points, and part of it was that there was a competitive race for governor, and so the Republican Party put all its eggs in that basket. Mm-hmm. It does beg the question. Markey is not a young man. He's now in office through 2020. He's in the minority caucus in the Senate now that the Republicans have taken over. Where does he go? He's the dog that chased the car and caught it. Now what does he do with it? How does he distinguish himself, at least initially serving in the minority party for a six-year term? It'll be interesting to watch.
Is he a bulldog?
Say what you mean by that.
I mean, is he likely to start biting people in the ankle who he doesn't like?
He may, because he's in convincingly that he's got 6 years to work with here. I think what he'll do, though, is he'll look for issues, ways to distinguish himself, particularly in the shadow of Elizabeth Warren, who, for lots of different reasons, tends to overshadow every other statewide elected official in Massachusetts these days.
I'm glad you brought her up because your 2 minutes on the last one are up. And so the new one is on Elizabeth Warren. I got all my liberal friends, they stop me and say, "What does an Elizabeth Warren run for president? She could win primaries." And I always say, she could win primaries, all right, but I'm not so sure she could be president. She could win the presidency. Am I wrong?
And I think she knows that as well. She's very, very smart, savvy person. And I think the other argument for her seeking the presidency is simply to pull Hillary Clinton more to the left, more toward the populist themes that Elizabeth Warren articulates on a daily basis. And Elizabeth Warren was not on the ballot this year. She also expended a lot of political capital on behalf of Martha Coakley, campaigned with her all over the state to try and help her across the finish line. And in a way, even though this was an election where Republicans across the country prevailed, Elizabeth Warren prevailed among the base in this regard. These populist themes, the middle class is getting squeezed, the system is rigged. In the postmortems to the midterm election, I've read over and over from people saying, why isn't the Democratic Party getting back to that message? That is the message that will resonate. Income inequality, hard to sell that because we're an aspirational political culture and we all dream of climbing up the ladder. But this systemic argument that Elizabeth Warren makes that, no, whoever climbed up that ladder before you has pulled the ladder up behind them and the whole system is rigged, folks, analysts have said maybe that's the way to reach those working class Democrats that are such a problem for the party, that tend to walk away from the party and head toward moderate Republican or seemingly moderate Republican candidates. So Elizabeth Warren came through this cycle as a sage, a voice, a source of a potential winning message in 2016. It'll be very interesting to see how she conducts herself and whether she will continue to carry out that mission of being sort of the heir or heiress to Paul Wellstone and Ted Kennedy, sort of the conscience of the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right on the target. I often talk about how the middle class could either, as you said, be aspirational towards the people who have the most on the top, or be, you know, sort of say, okay, the people on the bottom are the people who are more like me, but they don't like that. So that you get a middle class Democrat, and they're not going to say, you know, let's do some more for the people who have nothing. Yes?
That's right. And that was a recurring theme in this cycle of the makers versus the takers. And so asking people to engage in sort of a collective form of politics to help the less fortunate tough economy and with stagnant wages, it's a hard argument to sell, however virtuous and good that might be.
Okay, but, okay. You're out of time. Okay. I'm sorry, Tim. I'm just so sorry on that. Scott Brown in New Hampshire. How come he lost?
Again, that was a race that actually was a little tighter than a lot of the polls suggested. In turn, Shaheen was expected.
Yeah.
Other than a few outliers, she had led in almost every poll this fall.
I was surprised.
He made it a horse race. He had some stumbles at the end of the cycle. He had one debate in particular where a journalist asked him a question based on geography and the what would you recommend for economic development in Sullivan County? And Brown's answers indicated he didn't quite know where that was. He was talking about the skiing industry. And when you think about it, anyone can have a lapse like that. But it reinforced the narrative that the Democrats had been pushing, that he was an outsider, a carpetbagger, an opportunist, someone who didn't really have New Hampshire's best interest at heart, but was using this as a vehicle to get back into the national spotlight.
Sounds right to me. Let's go to
Whether it was or not, it really kind of lapse haunted him late in the campaign.
Let's go to Connecticut. That was a real horse race. What happened?
It was. It certainly was. And what we what we saw there, we had an independent candidate, Joe Visconti, who in the waning days, the Saturday before the election, said, I'm dropping out, I'm throwing my support to Tom Foley, the Republican nominee who had lost narrowly to Daniel Molloy in 2010. He said, I'm throwing my support to him because I believe in the Second Amendment, Tom Foley believes in the Second Amendment, and we can't afford another 4 years of Daniel Molloy. So this was square on gun control and on gun restrictions that Molloy had convinced the legislature to pass in the wake of the shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School. And Visconti dropped out, but his name remained on the ballot. He still polled about 1% of the vote. It did not help Tom Foley in the way he had hoped it would. Molloy actually won by a few points, and much more comfortably than in 2010, where he won by half a percentage point. And so he's in. It was going to be a tough race for him because, as governor, he did some things to anger his base. He renegotiated public employee union contracts, and so organized labor wasn't entirely thrilled with him. There were spending cuts to balance the budget. Other constituencies in his base were not excited. But he prevailed through sheer will, if nothing else, to put together the coalition he needed to win another term.
Okay, that's great. Now we have 1 minute left. I want to ask you about why the casino repeal question was defeated in Massachusetts. Why did the people say we want the casinos?
There are a couple factors there. One, money in particular. So the casinos themselves spent a considerable amount of money on advertising and on voter mobilization. Say what you will about MGM. When Springfield had its referendum on casinos, MGM built a get-out-the-vote operation that would be the envy of a lot of political parties. They expanded that to the rest of the state as well. And I think, so the repeal of the casino deal folks were simply outmatched, outspent. I also think their argument was a tough one to sell, that this is not the kind of economic development that works, that these jobs will come and go. The counter-argument that we heard particularly in Springfield was, well, what else do you have? What development are you going to bring in? Yeah. And there is no way to argue against that.
Okay, and I take it I'll see you at a casino, Tim?
I buy scratch lottery tickets. That's about the extent of it. I'll leave that for others.
Tim Versalotti is the director of the Western New England University poll, a wonderful guy, a professor of political science, and a guy we love to have on the Congressional Corner. Thank you so much for being with us, Tim.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.